Hey, Laser Graves listeners, this is EK here. You know, when I was a kid growing up in the 80s, there was a set of books called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that terrified all of us on the playground. And the artwork in it was horrifying, but it made a huge impact on my life. So, flash forward, and a documentary was being created on these books, not only tracing the stories and the artwork, but also the controversy around them. You know, they became a number one banned book in America and pulled off the shelves in libraries. Well, this documentary traces that whole story, which is pretty fascinating, with amazing interviews with the family and friends and authors like R.L. Stine. And I was lucky enough to be involved in that documentary. I did all of the music. I composed the entire original soundtrack to that. And this documentary is now, as of today, available. You can find it on video on demand, but also online stores like Target and Best Buy. Or if you have a Walmart or something, you can just walk right into the store and pull it off the shelf and buy it. And I would appreciate if you would check it out, because it was a labor of love for several years by director Cody Merrick. He kind of single-handedly captured this, and I came on board, and it was a small crew, but we worked really hard on it, and we're very proud of it, and I would love for you to check it out and show your support, because if you are a fan of all things horror, especially children's horror of the 80s and 90s, it does not get any better than Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So run over to your local store and pick up a copy of this awesome documentary and enjoy it with your friends. Okay, bye.
Welcome back to another episode of Laser Graves. I'm the cool host, Mariah Rose Wimmer, and here's my co-host, Keith Wimmer.
Co-cool host.
Okay.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We're back with another episode.
Episode 467.
Minus 324. You do the math. So what we're getting to today is, who knows what.
I don't know.
I don't know what this is going to come out like.
But honestly, like halfway through, I was like, I don't even know why I'm taking notes.
I know. It was very difficult to.
Yeah.
We are covering 1987's Funland, a first-time watch for both of us.
Also a misnomer if ever there was one.
No, in so many ways. Everything about this movie is misleading.
Yep.
But we'll get to it. We'll see. I don't know. I'm curious to see what you thought of it, because we, as normal, didn't talk about it afterwards. We'd save it.
Isn't that weird, though, that we sit right next to each other and we watch something and we, like, make buggy eyes at each other and we're like, don't say it. Don't say it. It's for the podcast.
Save it for the, save the goods, man. Save the goods. Yeah. Well, it was a weird one. Definitely. That was my takeaway, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we get started, thrift store finds.
Oh, I had to go to a thrift store today because I knew you were going to ask. And I was like, criminy, I haven't been to a thrift store. And so I took our children, since it's summer, and they're with me all the time. And we went into Goodwill and wandered around aimlessly until I found this cool Scandinavian jar. And I was like, yes, perfect. It has this cool, like, Scandinavian-esque pattern. I don't know. And then I was like, I have no purpose for a Scandinavian jar. So I stood in front of it, willing it to have a purpose, and finally decided, dog treats.
That's what that is?
Yep. All the dog treats are in there.
No, I know that. I mean, but you're calling that Scandinavian?
I mean, I said I Scandinavian-esque.
I think you're not even on the right continent, but
whatever.
But it was cool. It's a cool jar.
You're a turd. It says Scandinavia on the bottom.
No, it doesn't.
It says made in Scandinavia. And then I also got some cool stationery.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I can take credit for this since I okayed it. I bought one of our children a poster that says, it's a bunch of cats, and it says, forever friends.
Nice.
Yeah. As you well know, because you hung it above her bed.
Yeah, she's really excited about it.
What about you? What did you find?
I knew you were going to ask me, and I was like, oh, I have to go to the thrift store because she's going to ask me. And I found a tape for our girls. Let me grab it. Never heard of it. I think it was made in the 70s, maybe. It's called The Cat from Outer Space.
Oh, it's so cute. It looks so adorable. Proud.
The girls were very excited about it. It's about that an alien cat color. That crash lands.
Now we're going to have to watch it, though.
Yeah, maybe we'll do an episode on if it's in the 80s.
Look.
I don't think it is.
Look on it.
And then, the good find.
Mm.
So we've been having this thing where you had a lot of fun when we did Avenging Force, and then you refused to do another action movie.
I fell asleep.
Yeah, but you still enjoyed it. Do you remember the star of Avenging
Force?
Yeah,
what's his name? I remember his face.
So you remember...
Tom Dalton.
Michael Dudikoff.
Oh, yeah, Michael Dudikoff.
American Ninja.
Oh,
I found American Ninja Part 2.
Oh.
So this... Say hello to one of your future episodes.
Then you have to watch Three Ninjas Kickback.
I don't think that's an 80s movie.
I don't care.
Deal. All right,
or well, Surf Ninjas. You have to watch Surf Ninjas three times.
I come across Surf Ninjas all the time, and I never buy it.
I know. It's not good. I remember it well. Why is it in my mind? Why can't I remember cool stuff? I just remember, like, scene by scene Surf Ninjas.
Yeah. Well, you know, they say that you remember things that make a large impact on your life.
No, they don't.
And so... that apparently was really formative to your sense of humor, to your style, your fashion sense. I see it now. I see it all.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's get started. So, Funland, 1987. This is directed by Michael Simpson, who I knew the name, but I couldn't figure out why. And I would not have put this together.
Okay.
He is well known in the horror community, to our listeners especially. He's the director of Sleepaway Camp Part 2 and 3, which are like cult classics.
Big stuff.
This, however, is not one of those films.
No? I mean, culty.
Definitely culty, but not like that. And then the composer was James Oliviero, and he ended up doing this film.
Is it Oliviero or Olivero?
I don't know. Potato, potato, okay. Tomato, tomato.
Okay, okay.
So there... Oh, we should write a song about it.
Choose Your Own Adventure. Olivero, Oliviero.
Olivero sounds like olive oil.
Okay.
So I don't think he would go with that professionally.
Oh.
I think that would be offensive.
Okay.
So he did this film, but he also did the score for Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3.
Hmm. And so they high-fived and said, we're sticking together.
Let's do this again.
Not stopping. Can't stop, won't stop.
Nope.
Gotta make the movies together. Doesn't matter if they're good.
No. But they're gonna be hella expensive when you go to buy them 30 years later on VHS.
Is this a valuable movie?
No, not Funland, but Sleepaway Camp 2 is a little pricey. Sleepaway Camp 3 is extremely expensive. That's like a very
well,
hard...
Well, sure.
It's like anywhere between 60 to 150 bucks. It's crazy. People hoard it like it's precious gold that they pulled out of a dead man pirate's tooth.
Oh, I thought you were saying they pulled it out of a dead man.
No, well, they did. They pried open his mouth and they said, there's gold up in their mouth. And then they pulled it out. And then they said, this looks... They put it on a scale.
Uh-huh.
And then on the other side of the scale, they put a copy of Sleepaway Camp Part 3 on VHS. And they came out equal. And they were like, looks like we should charge on eBay the same amount for this tape that we should for this dead man's gold too. And that's how the prices came to be fixed on eBay.
Oh, okay.
So
I like that.
Okay, well, that's who directed it. That's who composed it. We start, before the movie even starts, we watch the previews this time, which are always fun.
We also chose this, you know, before we go into the previews, you brought me out a stack to choose from. Like, the film I was least likely to fall asleep watching, basically. And I chose this one because it was a writer from SNL, and I was like, oh, comedy, I can get on board with that. Because usually yeah. comedy is a little faster paced, so I'm less likely to crash. That was not the case.
No, it's billed. Okay, so talking about being misleading, it's really billed as like a comedy, like a dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
It's just kind of dark, like grayish dark.
And the spots that are supposed to be funny aren't funny.
Were they supposed to be funny?
Yeah, they were kind of like 80s funny. It didn't work for me.
No. But
so it's misleading in the sense that it's definitely not a comedy. Also, the cover has got to be one of the coolest covers of the 80s. Like, it is incredible.
It's like a painting.
Yeah, of this clown with a gun and so this cool. dark background. It is so incredibly
cool. He's like
cool.
emerging from the blackness. I would straight up buy that and hang it over our fireplace
yeah,
and give our children nightmares.
It's an incredible work of art. And when I found this, I found it at a thrift store, and I was so excited because I've seen the cover my whole life. I've always mm-hmm. known the cover. And I just thought, like, whoa, this is, like, a mega find. This looks like an awesome cult classic horror. And then when it said comedy on the back, I'm like, okay, I guess it's, like, a horror comedy?
Yeah, I was kind of game for that because it seemed it's fast-paced.
Nothing like that. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know what the genre is, but it is not any of that. So if you're going into it thinking that you're going to see something like that, you're not. The cover's mm-hmm. misleading. The description's misleading. But we start it with some ads. We get the Vestron logo, which is always yeah. fun floating in.
Oh, but the best ad I think we've seen to date in a VHS tape that we've been watching.
Oh, yeah, the horoscope.
It's like a commercial, like yeah. straight from the 80s.
It's like a personal horoscope, this like blonde lady with a space scene behind her. It's like blue screen, so it looks like she's traveling through space.
But then the astrological signs surround her.
Yeah, and she gives you her number. Like her 1-800 or 1-900 number. Do you?
Yeah, because I want to call it, but not really. 1-900-22 my day.
Oh, okay.
Because you call her, and she'll give you extremely personalized reviews of your life.
Right, yeah. And so that was a really fun surprise. The beginning of this movie was not a trailer for a movie, but an advertisement for a psychic hotline.
Do you remember those in the 80s? Like,
oh, don't you know? I remember Miss Cleo.
That was the 2000s. That
was it?
Yes, because remember, we were working at, we had those alternating shifts at the Curry Hall front desk. So for our listeners, I would work midnight to 4, mm-hmm. and Eric would work 4 until 8. And then we had a class at 8. But we would alternate, and there was a little TV in this front desk, and like all the like potheads and drunks would come in from the college. Like, this was their dorm, and we had like a little shop where we would just sell them like garbage food, like pizza pockets and
popcorn. Yeah,
yeah, just whatever garbage they came in wanting when they were stoned, and or drunk, or whatever,
or both.
Or they just wanted to talk to us, which was always awesome. I mean, you didn't get much of that because you were there 4 to 8, so most everybody was asleep. Anyway, we had this TV and we would watch it, and it was like endless Miss Cleos. But that was after we were graduated and in college, so that was 2000s, man.
Okay, well, there you go.
I just had to pinpoint on the timeline for all of us where Miss Cleo stands.
All right. I believed you, though, when you very first said it was in the 2000s.
Oh, hush.
And then
after, such a turd.
After we did the personal horoscope, we get a trailer for a movie that looks so boring. I almost fell asleep during the trailer, called Welcome Home with Kris Kristofferson.
Wait.
Some snooze fest about him coming back from Vietnam, but the wife thought he was dead and she remarried.
Yeah.
Oh, man, was that boring. And then after that, we get one called Bailout, an action movie with Linda Blair and David Hasselhoff.
All good things.
I actually was like, I'll note that one.
The preview was long enough that I feel like I've already watched all of the highlights.
That's
from
true.
That movie.
Yeah,
and everything else is going to be filler.
Several explosions.
So many.
Yeah, it was kind of fun to watch the previews before the movie even started.
Which were better than the movie, maybe?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know how I feel about it.
I don't know.
Okay, so it starts out, it's got this like snazzy kind of 80s jam music that's happening. And the title's really cool. Funland, the font has kind of got this wavy.
It's like a roller coaster.
Like a roller coaster. It's cool. And then it opens on a TV ad for Funland, like they're filming with this clown, and then there's a kid in a wheelchair, and it's we find out Funland's an amusement park, and this is the mascot. This clown is like their
Bruce the clown. Isn't he Bruce Burger?
Yeah, something like
that. Okay, so let's describe Bruce Burger. He's a pizza clown.
Yeah, he's wearing a giant pizza
slice. So I don't know
slice.
Where the burger comes in.
I don't know. Maybe it's not burger. Maybe it's like
I feel pretty sure because I kept going, is there like a burger hat? Is there a burger element? And all it was a clown with like a big pizza slice around his neck.
That's true.
And carrying the sausage puppet.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, well, that's who we open up with.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to like the scene of like applications.
So people are applying for work at Funland. And honestly, the workers at Funland, all of those scenes are completely unnecessary to the film.
Yeah.
And it's like they were trying, like, let's splice in these people getting jobs at Funland so that it seems like an 80s film, maybe?
Yeah, this was, the scenes with the workers were the most, like, National Lampoon kind of style, like, humor, where it was supposed to be goofy, like, they're interviewing right at the beginning. There's this one woman who reminds me of, what's her name? Melissa something. She's a comedian. She was in the new Ghostbusters. She's a SNL.
Oh.
Melissa McCarthy?
But I don't know if she... Was she on SNL?
I thought she was. Maybe she wasn't, now that I'm thinking
she's
about
it.
She's
the one that poops the lava in Bridesmaids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one of these people reminds me of her a little. And because she talks like her and she looks like her.
Okay.
I went to the David Lee Roth University... And it's things like that where they're, like, trying to be funny, like, 80s funny, and it's just not working quite yet. And so, I agree, the scenes where the workers are cut in seems very forced and kind of detrimental to the film. Like, it takes away...
Yeah, actually, right here, because then it cuts to a board meeting about Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like... trying to get my footing, like, what are we watching? Is this a comedy? Is it a horror? Or is it just boring? And the answer is yep, just to all those. But it was very difficult to understand what was happening in these first few scenes, like what direction, which is kind of interesting if you really think about it. Because, you know, when you watch a movie, you usually go into it going, okay, I'm going to watch this type of movie. But I'd read the back and was like, perfect. And I thought I had an idea, and it was quickly kind of turned on its ear as we were watching the beginning, and I just felt completely adrift. I didn't know where we were going with this or what was happening.
Yeah, I read some reviews after we watched this because I was really unclear how I felt about it. And it's kind of split down the middle where people are like, this movie sucks. And then other people are like, this movie's kind of brilliant, and if you don't see it, you're missing what's really happening here. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, I wonder what a rewatch would do now that I know what I'm in for. Like, what would I pick up on? But I agree, because some of the complaints about this movie, or I don't even know if they were complaints, but observations, is that you don't... It's hard to pinpoint what this film is even trying to be, because it's not a comedy, but it says it's a comedy. It's not a horror film, but it says it's a horror film. It's very... Yeah.
It's not a horror at all.
It's more, like, psychological than anything. It's really...
Yeah.
It's character-driven by this clown, which they do a good job of really, like, getting you into his world. And that's where this business meeting at the beginning is interesting, because they're basically discussing what to do with him, and he's been around so long that they want to keep him.
Yeah, so the owner of Funland, let's get this back on the... on track here. The owner of Funland is a staunch supporter of the Bruce the Clown. And everybody else is like, why are you keeping Bruce around? Because he's kind of erratic. I guess he like blew up at some kids at opening the year before, or some senior citizens the year before.
He had like a mental breakdown is what happened.
And so the owner, over the course of several scenes here, basically explains that Bruce used to be their accountant, and he was like a brilliant accountant named, do you remember his name?
Neil, maybe?
Yes, Neil. And he has decided to just like step into this Bruce character, and the owner was cool with it. And saw some value to him and wasn't really worried about all the other things. And he had his, Bruce had the owner's full support, essentially.
Yeah, and he wanted to now be known as Bruce and not as Neil anymore. Like, he was just basically all in.
Like, leaving this, his actual past personality.
Yeah, behind. He was just this clown, and that's how he defined himself. And so then we find out, another person who's like, I don't know if he's the co... Or like the second he's in the charge.
He's the new accountant, I believe.
Oh, is that who he is? Mm-hmm. His name's Mike, who has a lot of mannerisms, and his vocal inflections are like...
Jason Sudeikis.
Yes. And I thought it was like his dad or something, but it's not. Actually, it's this dude who was from Police Academy movies. He was also in Friday the 13th Part 4. Like, he's been in a lot of stuff. I just didn't know who he was.
Oh, we should also mention that Bruce is played by one of the dudes, one of the boyfriends from Laverne and Shirley. If you saw him, you'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have another fun fact for what he was in. I was wondering if you would catch it once he took off his makeup.
What was it?
Oh, we'll get to it. Yeah, and then Bruce comes up with these, like, lists of demands. He's like, hey, I've been thinking. I need a bigger dressing room. And he's finding that he's around. He's being kept around, but nobody really wants him there.
And it seems as though he's living there, like, straight up.
He's really struggling, so he's like this kind of strange character that they're introducing right away that's pretty complex, actually.
It sounds like it was an accountant who had some sort of mental collapse and is now being employed as the clown because the owner took pity on him.
Yeah, just liked him. And so then we start to meet the staff. There's some scenes in this movie that we should discuss that I didn't know if they were going to be, like, tongue-in-cheek or if they were just, full-on racist. But there's a couple scenes. One of them happens right here where Bruce is, like, in the cafeteria. And there's, like, all these African-Americans dressed like farm workers, like, in the fields, and they're serving watermelon. Ooh. And it was really uncomfortable. And I was like, are they trying to make some social commentary? I don't think they were.
I think it was just a racist scene.
Yeah.
But it was weird because I also, later in the movie, and we can just mention it now, there's a bunch of KKK members going into the Funland park.
Yeah, they're just, like, walking around with average people, like, to get on the roller coasters.
I don't know.
So that's when I was like, is this over my head and I'm missing something that they're trying to say?
I don't know.
Or is this just a racist undertone? Well, to be determined.
I feel like it... I don't know. I would like to know I don't know.
Well, that's where it gets... Okay, the only reason why I'm bringing this up, because we didn't really need to, except for this is where I think the argument gets made that this film is actually a lot more complex than people give it credit for.
Yeah.
And I would have to think that people didn't just throw scenes like that in there because they thought it would be funny, but that it's actually got a deeper purpose. So,
And it wasn't funny, but its purpose was unclear. So,
anyway, I was really uncomfortable, too.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, we're looking at it with 21st century eyes, and I don't know how it would have been viewed in the 80s.
I don't know, but so after that, we then go to, there's like a prep talk at an orientation for staff, and then the owner at the end of the orientation says, you know, I'll only sell this over my dead body or something, and then it really quick flashes to the TV the next day, and he's found dead.
Yeah.
And he was killed. And now we're at the funeral for the owner, and the eulogy is being done by Bruce the Clown.
Who is wearing clown makeup, but it's black now.
I loved that. I thought that was funny.
He had, like, black hair, black eyebrows, and a black frowny smile.
Yeah. And he is talking about the other coworkers. Like, I remember when so-and-so said how much he hated this place and blah, 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 and they're all getting uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
There's one part where he talks about the owner who just died. And he said, I remember when this young assistant was bending over something and he said, I want to take my shoes off and run through those breasts or something like that. I don't know what that was all about.
I don't know either.
But that was part of the eulogy that Bruce the Clown
was
giving.
He was just not, like, a eulogy is typically supposed to be really reverent and speaking about the highlights of a person's life, but this was instead something different, which was kind of awesome.
Yeah. It was clear, and it was setting the tone that he clearly had a mental breakdown and he's not socially, like, adjusted anymore.
Yeah.
And then we find out that the wife of the owner has
sold it.
Yeah, she sold Funland to the mob, like, to the Italian mafia.
The DeMaros, yeah.
who do the, like, impression, you know, oh, let me tell you something about this Funland that I got.
Question.
Yeah.
What's up with the DeMauro guy's cheeks? Was there something in him?
Maybe.
Or is that just how his face is and I'm a jerk for mentioning it? But
I don't know.
They were so large, but only at the bottom. They're like sort of pendulous, like an old dog. Anyway.
I don't know. But I can't keep it a secret anymore.
Oh.
Do you want to know who our lead, Bruce the Clown,
yeah,
is? Because you'll know him much more from this than Laverne and Shirley. He was Tim Pinkle. Do you recognize that name?
No.
He was the, weasel expert and choreographer on Twin Peaks.
Oh,
do you remember him?
Yes.
Mr. Pinkle?
Weird.
Yeah.
Why did I not notice him from...
I noticed him once he took off his makeup. I was like, wait a minute. And then I recognized
That's
the voice.
Right.
Because he talks on that really high, uh-huh, kind of voice like that. And I was like, something...
Weird.
I recognize this guy. Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
And then when I looked up his credits after that... He has been, this is not an understatement, or not an overstatement, I should say. He has been in basically every TV show that was ever created, one episode. It was insane.
Yeah.
It's like every major hit TV show, and he had one episode, It was amazing. I could not believe it.
Do you remember the previews that we were talking about with Kris Kristofferson? How there was a teen boy, and I was like, who's that teen boy? I've seen him before, and I looked him up, and it was the teen boy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Right.
And I was like, surely I'm thinking of him from something else. And I looked, and it was the same story. He's been in every episode of, like, NCIS.
Yeah.
All of those, but, like, one episode. So
yeah.
I think that's what people do
when
they just need to continue acting to make money.
That's a working, you know, working actor right there. But
hard
man,
work.
I could not believe how many shows he had been on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, really major shows, but it was all one episode.
Oh, that's
okay,
exhausting.
Anyway, so that's who he is in real life. He's Mr. Pinkle.
Okay.
So...
So then, we also, while the DeMauros are, they come to a board meeting, so we kind of get a sense of what they want to do. They, like, want to cut costs by 20%, and they basically just want to make a huge profit off of this Funland. And then they're asking where Neil something is, and we know Neil is Bruce, but apparently Bruce is a major stockholder in the company.
Yeah, he owns, like, more than half of it. He'd basically own it if he claimed it.
Yeah.
It's like a Mr. Deeds moment.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? You underestimate my sneakiness. So.
Now I want to watch Mr. Deeds.
$50 billion. What does he say at the end? How about $1 million? No, I can't. How about $50 million? Something like that. He's like, okay.
Let's go watch Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, let's do it. So Bruce loses it too at this point, and we find out his puppet, he has this hand puppet that he walks around
which
with.
Is a pepperoni, like a big sausage.
Peter Pepperoni.
Mm-hmm.
And his, I thought it was sausage too. He has a relationship with it, like, remember Danny from The Shining with his finger?
Red
Rum. It's like that, like he talks to it, and then... As the course of the movie goes on, it talks to him and is like, you should think about what you're doing.
In a strange, echoey voice.
It's so weird. And this is where it starts to get like, oh.
Weird.
So this is where the film kind of shifted for me was I didn't know what I was watching all of a sudden. Because it started to get this kind of more, not art house, but like culty feel. Where it was getting more uncomfortable and less funny. Or,
Well,
it wasn't funny up to it was boring, but...
Less predictable.
Yeah.
And I think it says a lot about how we predict, like, what we're going to watch. We go into something and we want to know, like, a general outline. Especially people like us who've watched so many movies. You go in and you have a certain expectation, but when you really don't know what's coming or where the film is going, it's a strangely unsettling feeling.
Yeah, something I will definitely give this film credit for is whether it worked or not, it is pretty unique in the way in which it unfolds, because this film starts to shift here, and I wrote that it's like a slow burn, because by this point I was pretty bored, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
At this, because I didn't know, even know where it was going. I'm like, is this it? This is what's happening? But when he starts to talk to his hand puppet, that's when it starts to kind of get strange. And it really, it heightens, because what happens is these new mob owners decide to invite the real Bruce the Clown. So apparently,
like, national.
We find out, yeah, that Bruce has actually only been the local version of Bruce the Clown that's a national version. It's kind of like Ronald McDonald.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody, like, locally can dress up as Ronald McDonald, but there's, like, the real one.
The one
who
that's
does
on
all
the commercials.
Yeah, all the commercials. So they're going to bring him in. And this is really where our normal Bruce the Clown shifts. He starts to lose it because he's being pushed out after... And this is, like, the only thing he has left going for him.
Well, he's... At this point, he's moved into a closed wax museum on the Funland property because he's getting kicked out of his dressing room for the new national Bruce who's coming in. So he's just... totally adrift.
Yeah, so now they have him living in the closed down wax museum.
which seems like it might be funny, but it's not.
Yeah, the music also is pretty confusing during this point. It's I wrote it as introspective elevator music. Yeah. It was very bizarre. But then it just picks up. I didn't take a lot of notes because I was kind of just baffled by it as I was watching it.
What do you
it.
Write down when you're watching this? There's nothing to say. He starts talking to a wax figure of Humphrey Bogart, I think?
Yeah, that's who it
and
is.
And the pepperoni. And then the ghost of...
of his boss.
His dead boss, who reveals he's been shot
and they're like,
by the Damaros.
Yeah, and they're like playing cards... like poker.
In a closed wax museum.
And the sausage, the puppet, has a poker hat and like a cigar. It's talking to him the whole time.
Uh-huh.
It's so... it just gets progressively weirder.
And then it goes to like a board meeting where they want to make a celebrity death ride in the place of the old wax museum. It's just very strange. Like, I didn't understand the purpose of basically anything that happened from here on out.
Well, so there's also a Funland montage. So the park opens up.
It's like a soft opening because they keep talking about the grand opening.
Right. But it's like, you know, kids on rides and having fun. And it was so out of place with what we had just been watching, where there's this insane clown playing poker with a couple ghosts. It was weird.
Yes.
And so that's happening.
And weird jokey stuff with the newly oriented staff.
Yeah. So during the scenes where his puppet hand is talking to him and it's getting creepier, this is when I noticed that there are flashes in this movie that are actually pretty amazing. And I don't know why they didn't. I don't know if they lacked confidence in their story and they were like, we got to make it funny too or what. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if they would have just gone all in, and this would have been more of like a weird kind of psychological profile of a man losing his mind, it could have been even better and stronger. Mm-hmm. Because the moments in this film where it's about him talking to himself through this puppet and stuff are really cool. And his character develops really great over the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that when it's cut in with these montages of like people on roller coasters and goofing off, and there's a slapstick scene where that worker from the David Lee Roth University that I was talking about earlier comes up and the couple like locked their keys in the car and she's like, hold on, I'll get it for you, and pulls out a gun and shoots the window out.
And then tears off a door?
Yeah, and it's supposed to be funny, like Police Academy style funny. But it's just, at this point, there's no place for that kind of humor in this film because we have gone off the deep end with this clown.
Well, I could see where if they were just doing the montages of, like, people having fun at Funland, you could kind of see how the duality of, like, people being lighthearted and easygoing versus this man who's losing control over his life. But then this weird, like, really dumb slapstick element is extremely confusing.
Yeah, and it's very, it really sucks the steam out of where the story of Bruce the Clown was going, when we have to kind of put up with this, like, cheesy 80s humor that's not really fitting in. But that's where a second watch might be like, oh, okay, I see the flow now that I actually know where the story's going.
Or it could be that you know, there was a creative vision and then some producers came in and were like, no, we got to do this, that, and the other.
Put in more funny stuff, kid.
You're an SNL writer.
So I guess in my notes, I just wrote, I don't really get it. I don't understand it. It's like they want it to be this Vegas style show now, the mobsters do. And they're like, let's bring in some women to dance because that'll make us money. And it's just weird. And then I don't know. One thing, though, that did stand out to me, this is so dumb. You know the woman who is always in the board meetings that they hired, who's like the tough one?
Yeah.
Every time she goes to make a point, she takes off her glasses. She goes, now, let me make up, scenario. Glasses. I just took off my glasses for emphasis. Uh-huh. So she always has to take off her glasses, fold them, and then go, let me ask you. And it's really funny because I thought, I wonder if people do that often, like take off their glasses when they're about to make a point.
If you've got like reading glasses and you've been reading notes and then you have to make your point with eye contact, deep
contact. There you go.
That's what I do anyway.
We flash to what we later find out is a hallucination.
It's in the cafeteria.
The cafeteria. And now the gang who was serving watermelon is now
doing an inexplicable dance sequence is what I have it described in my
They're
notes.
Like the typical 80s. They actually have shirts that say the Cosmic Gang. And they're doing the, like, breakdancing and the 80s rap.
And serving food.
Yeah, and they're doing this, like, rap while they're serving food. I don't get it.
Also, there's, like, a strange gothic angel walking around.
Yeah.
And was weird. The dead boss is there.
Yes.
So
having his lunch.
Yeah. Like telling Bruce the Clown what to order because he's dead and he's so hungry.
Yes.
So that's all happening. Bruce is kind of freaking out and the old dead owner, Angus is his name. Actually, I see it in my notes. He helps him order and then they go sit down and eat together. And he tells Bruce that they can block the sale of Funland from the DeMarros still. Like there's still time to intervene. Yeah. And they say he'll do it in a few weeks. And then it goes to the wax museum, Bruce playing cards again with the wax figure of Humphrey Bogart, who's been sold and is going to be leaving at some point. His dead boss, Angus, and his puppet. And he's learning, like, they're telling him how he can save Funland because he has so many assets. He owns so much of Funland. And they're basically encouraging him to turn back into Neil, I think.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, I didn't know what to make of it at this point. And it was just so... Right. It was bizarre. I just wrote in my notes that I think I need to watch it again because I don't... It seems weirder than I was giving it credit for. Mm-hmm. I think I was watching it halfway through and then realized I had just gotten fooled. And I was like, wait a minute, what am I even watching? Yeah. And I think if I would have gone in with that mentality, I maybe would have been a little more observant. And the other thing was, I was thinking like, man, does this film just suck? What other films came out around this time that would like be
good question.
More... So I made a little list for you, like a hit list of 1987. So okay. While Funland came out, this bizarre film.
Yeah.
Other films during this time. The Princess Bride, Predator, Lost Boys, Full Metal Jacket, RoboCop, Hellraiser. I mean, these are
well,
like...
What are the cult films coming out at this time?
That's Evil Dead 2. I mean, those... This was such a weird, out-of-place film that nothing compared to it that was coming out at the time.
Okay.
Like, that's what I guess that's what I'm getting at, is it doesn't fit.
It feels directionless, honestly.
Absolutely. It does not feel derivative of any other film around it at the time. It's just this weird enigma, and I think that's why I'm struggling to figure out where it belongs.
Yes. Let's tie it back to the story, and we can kind of wrap it up here pretty quick with the storyline, because it's pretty clear. The DeMarros want to fire the old Bruce and replace him with the National Bruce. And there's this whole side story about the National Bruce wanted to be a big-time actor, like a Shakespearean actor, and here he is taking this garbage job, which he doesn't appreciate. And, of course, Bruce, for Funland, loves his job and is offended that somebody wouldn't love it, too. And so... We go to a bunch of stuff of Bruce prepping while the DeMaros are deciding they want to fire old Bruce.
Right.
And the scenes I wrote here have lots of dead space.
Yeah, it's really strange because there's actually a lot that happens here. One of the things is they realize that Bruce is Neil. Yes. And like
he owns the company, basically. He owns
Funland, basically, yeah. And then we also find that Bruce has found a gun.
He's purchased a gun, yeah.
Put it together, and he's going to go up into the clock tower and assassinate the real Bruce the Clown because he doesn't appreciate his job.
Uh-huh.
And this
on opening day, on the grand opening day.
Yeah, and so he's about to shoot Bruce, who's like on this roller coaster. He shoots this goon instead. The guy on the roller coaster, by the way, who has to keep doing the roller coaster over and over and over and get sick,
uh-huh,
was some radio DJ.
Yeah.
That was a weird scene. I don't know what that was all
about. Super out of place side story.
But basically, when it's all done, the mob guys, I guess, take the fall for shooting people because they're tied up in crime. And Bruce is now the owner, and he's out, like, he's free.
And he falls back into being Neil, the accountant.
Yeah, and at the end, there's like this creepy scene with a singing with a kid, and it gets so weird. But yeah, now he's the accountant again.
Yeah.
And he controls Funland. I don't know.
He had a long rant in there too, but it didn't really clarify anything. It was very strange, and that's the end of the movie, and we were both just like,
I think this is the most we've ever struggled with an episode, as far as like not talking about it, but just like
understanding it.
We watch things that are very crystal clear. This was a dumb movie, or this was a fun movie, or this was, you know, whatever. I don't know what to say about this. I think it has more to it than it's led to believe upon first watch.
Sure. You know. Here's what my takeaway was. I think they did have something big they wanted to say. Whoever wrote it, I don't remember. And all of the actors involved, I think that there was probably a grand vision, but they fell short because it's so difficult to understand. Either it's so simple of a man, like, struggling to find his place and finally accepting it, like, in the corporate world, or there's something more and greater to it about our purpose that they just kind of fell short of.
I agree. I think it's an effective story. If some of the, like, filler slapstick wasn't crammed in there, because it didn't fit. It,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I love a good juxtaposition, but this just didn't work, in my opinion. And I think if it was shortened, either not to a short film, but maybe condensed and really focused more on the creepy cult aspects,
mm-hmm,
It could have been a really interesting film.
You know what it feels like is too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, there are too many people who wanted different things out of this film.
Yes, I agree. I don't know, because right away I was like, okay, well, that's over with. I quoted you, this is what you said, and I was like, oh, that's how she feels about it. You said, because, you know, I trade VHS with people,
mm-hmm,
and you said, this would be a good trade. I don't need to ever watch this again in my life.
It's true. Yeah. I won't.
I think I will. I actually, here's the test for me. I found myself this morning still thinking about it and wondering if I missed it or if it really was just a bad film.
I feel like I'm a pretty smart person. And if it was that ambiguous a story, then they haven't succeeded.
I would play devil's advocate with any David Lynch movie. Or any Peter Greenaway movie.
Oh, sure. Like, well, you Peter walk Greenaway away going, but
what just happened? But it's because it's not working on your expectations.
But you have a sense of cohesion, a sense of greater vision. Even if it doesn't really all make sense, you kind of get it. Whereas with this, it felt like it didn't make sense. It felt like it was written by several different people who had opposing ideas of what kind of a movie they wanted to watch, and it wasn't intentionally done. It felt like there was definitely a great lack of intention.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I don't know. I just don't even know where to stand.
How many
on this.
Times have we said, I don't know?
It's good, though. Hopefully this wasn't just like a complete snooze fest for our listeners, but this is also a good thing about podcasts, is they should examine films, right? And this is... It's probably one of the first times we've really tried to get into a film versus just talking about what happened in the film. And that's a good thing. I'm reluctant to recommend it and say you should watch it, because all in all, regardless of if it's like a really cool cult film and it's over my head or if it's or not.
You're smart. It's not over your head.
Boring, though. I would say 70% of this film is very slow and very boring. But the 30% that isn't is pretty fascinating.
I feel like if you've seen it, I would love to hear your point of view. If you've made a note, and if you've watched it more than once, that would be shocking to me.
Yeah, do share your opinions, because we never really, I mean, usually when we cover something like Weekend at Bernie's or, you know, like, okay, I don't know if I need somebody else's opinion on it, but this one I kind of would be interested. But I guess that's enough of that, because we could go on forever.
A lot of hemming and hawing over this one, that's for sure.
But that's this week's episode, Funland, and check
it
out if
you
want.
It's not so much fun.
Yeah, 1987. It's interesting, to say the least. But if you like what you heard, or you want to tell a friend because you don't like what you hear, but you think somebody that you know would really be into it, you're like, oh, there's that guy at the office that always talks about Funland.
Break into his phone. Yeah, we got secretly the podcast subscribe for him.
Yeah. No, you can. Check us out on all kinds of places, Spotify and
Podbean.
iTunes, Podbean at Laser Graves. You can rate, review, and then you can follow us on Instagram at Laser Graves. You can follow me on Instagram at Death at 33 RPM. And
you can follow me at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
And that's about it until next week. So thanks for working through this one with us. And share your thoughts if you've seen this one. All right. See you next time. Bye.